should get that put on the front of this podcast.
What a song that was.
Beautiful.
Overeem used to walk out to it, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
He can walk out to whatever he wants to walk out to.
It's weird when, like, I remember that happened when, who was it, fought in Pride, and they came out to the UFC music. I think it was Chuck Liddell, and it was, yeah, weird. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlawed Picks podcast. You love our new logo, don't you? Owen threw this together.
As he does.
Talented little dude.
Nailed it.
He's smashed it, so we love that. I want that on a t-shirt for sure.
Definitely. It's coming.
Well, let's start the weekend. I've got a bit of fluff on my mic. Cover your ears.
Watch out. Well, look, first things first. Good to see you back on Cage Warriors, my friend.
Mate.
Very cool. See you back on the mic. I really enjoyed it. Congratulations to Graham Bolan and the Cage Warriors crew. The trilogy was
awesome.
Pretty cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was
pretty
awesome.
Cool. Came across really, really well. I watched every minute of it. It was wicked. And it was, honestly, man, it was good to see you back on the mic where you belong.
Thanks, man.
Exactly where you belong.
I have not laughed that hard in a long, long time. Because it was like...
It's a good crew of people.
It was awesome. So we went into the bubble. We entered the bubble on Wednesday. And so we got to the hotel, got the lateral flow test, so you get your results back pretty quick. And then once you've got that test passed, then you're allowed into the hotel. And they check you in. And then we had everyone was on the same floor and we had our own elevator and it was really well organized. But then there was one bus transporting everyone to the venue and back. And it was
Fun
York
bus.
Hall. Mate, it was hilarious because we've got... Like Goddard's on there, and the other referees, Rich Mitchell, Dan Mavahedi, and then the judges, you know, Ben Cartledge and David Leatherby, and they're all just like these guys travel around the world together, you know. And you get like every now and then, when we're doing Listen, you'll get a little glimpse into that world, but generally, they know what's going on, and they have these stories they've got,
Mate, it was a good trilogy, man. There's some
good fights.
Cage Warriors is in
through.
Pretty good shape in it.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Figlak Brothers
are serious. Ian Garry looked incredible. Yeah. Paul Hughes, he's a real shining star. I very much enjoyed researching him in the build up to his fight.
Tobias Harilla, Vichenik
looks amazing. Yeah, Harilla's very, very good. And he knows
that
good
it,
he is
he?
As well. Yeah. Because he's 7-1 now. But that one loss was to someone that he beat before. He got caught in a rear naked choke. And I just, when I watched the fight, I was like, oh, I bet he just kind of took his eye off the prize because he knows he can beat this guy.
Very, very healthy.
Yeah.
Very healthy.
Yeah.
And Paddy the Baddy looks ready for the UFC, doesn't he, pretty much?
You know what? Like, since the last fight, what was it? It feels like a couple of years ago now, when he fought Soren Back. And he was on his back in the first round with that full sunk rear naked choke in and just couldn't finish him.
Yeah.
And like to this version of him, he looks different. Like I know our friend Rygor Paul's been working with him, Vortex, his company is. And they're just like, they've just changed him, just turned him around.
He definitely looks like something's changed, something's clicked, and physically he looks great. Emotionally and confidence wise, he's in a pretty good spot, isn't he? And he's ready to go. He just looks like, you know, it's the transition time, isn't it? I know Graham Boylan said he's going to make an offer.
Yeah.
Try and make him stay, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I'm excited to see where he goes next. But, you know, I mean, the most likely situation, I think, is that he's going to challenge for his belt. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be Cage Warriors champ transferring over to the UFC or wherever. I mean, we're assuming UFC. But, I can see Boylan going, look, you know, have a go at your belt again. Then we'll know you're really ready. That's what I think. But yeah, you look
good
great.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Enjoyed the whole three series.
So
great.
shall we chat about this?
Yeah. Well, actually,
where is
it? Well,
I always get paranoid because I'm.
Well, why are you doing that? So today's episode is sponsored by X-Brain.
Oh, it is.
It's sponsored by
X-Brain. I'll grab one of these right now.
So if you're in the UK and you want any of the Onnit products. That is obviously made over in the US, you can go to X-Brain. They are exclusive suppliers over here in the UK, and you will obviously save yourself some money and some time by getting it through X-Brain.
And you've got one of my Alpha Brains.
Yeah, I've stolen one of your Alpha Brains. The least you can do. But so they're a great company. They've got a whole load of supplements on their website, including their own branded supplements, and obviously the link to Onnit and the exclusive distributor rights. Oh, that,
I know that
will
was
not
loud,
have gone down well at all.
We've got some new Nalgene's coming out, yeah, as well, haven't we? So I like these green, old school ones, these ninja ones, but yeah, the new fluorescent ones. Well, they actually fluorescent go with green, the Alpha, yeah, Brain. We've got the same colours.
There's another link. But yeah, check them out. We'll put a link in the comments below, and we'll go from there. So shall we have a look back?
Yeah, let's have a look back. Good fights, good finishes.
We knew it was going to be crazy, but Cheyenne and the Ruiz, Bayes and Ruiz was crazy.
Yeah, yes.
I don't know.
Although we were talking about this, was it last podcast, the one before? Like last fighters one, that go by their nickname instead of by their actual name, like, yeah, Rampage and Korean,
yeah, yeah,
Zombie.
Yeah, yeah.
Montserrat, when we were talking about her fight, we were going off her actual name, which is Montserrat Ruiz.
Hmm.
But in the fight, in this, it was Montserrat Conejo.
Yeah,
and that
right,
means that means bunny.
Strange nickname, anyway.
It was a strange nickname.
There you go.
But weird.
Yeah, they were saying that
because that was,
yeah,
on the
right,
screen as well. Anyway,
yeah,
I just,
anyway.
Did she spit on her opponent? I've watched it a couple of times.
I didn't think she did. I thought she shouted at her, okay, in her mouth guard. And now whether she's a great actress, because in the post fight, via translator, they were talking about it. She did look genuinely surprised that someone thought she'd spat at her.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, who knows? I mean, ironically, I think Cheyenne's a better fighter.
Yeah.
She's a better fighter. She just needs to find a solution for the scaffold, isn't it? I mean, even in the prep for that fight, man, she must have been drilling that in the gym.
Yeah.
It was a clear
that's what she
thing
does,
that was going to happen.
For sure. Especially with that, with the key lock.
Yeah.
I mean,
she was quite aware of the key lock, wasn't she? Yeah. But she just couldn't stop the takedown from that position.
Yeah.
And she was clearly like, she wasn't hiding it.
So here's a question for you. And like, I think we discussed this about Ben Rothwell with his, you know, with the go-go choke. Like, physiologically, there are certain things that work better for some fighters than other.
Yeah.
Like, do you think, physiologically, because she's short.
She's got a low center of gravity, right?
Yeah. Like, imagine how difficult it would be to, I'd imagine someone quite tall, you'd be able to, like, run a circle and roll them over. Because that's the basic escape that I always remembered.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you run in a circle, and then when they try and chase you...
She did vaguely do what she was supposed to do, right? She
but it
just
was
couldn't,
hard work,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of ended up being ankle relatively on, boring, didn't it? But,
well, how do you think she was affected by her husband getting pinged early in the night?
Impossible not to, right?
Right, especially when he looked like,
unless
he was
about to break down. Unless you have zero emotional attachment to your
unless
husband.
Unless she doesn't really care. I'm sure she does.
I'm fine.
I'm sure she does.
Yeah.
Bruno Silva looked good,
though. Like, Chain was like, I'll follow you home, bitch.
Yeah. I've had people tweeting that at me. It's become it's become a thing.
It's good to have a little soundbite like that off the back of that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That should be the name of the next event. UFC 261. I'll follow you home, bitch.
Yeah, I like it.
Bruno Silva looked good.
Yeah.
He looked good.
Just nice timing.
Yeah.
Just timed over the top.
Yeah. And Montel Jackson looked really good.
Mm.
Super
what
slick.
What I was going to say about the Bayes fight.
Which
is
one?
I don't, the husband, is, I'm not sure what the name is. I can't tell you the name of it, but there's definitely a hypersensitivity to getting dropped once you've been dropped.
Yeah.
I mean, once you've short-circuited, then you're definitely hypersensitive to get short-circuited again.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, I should probably have done a bit more research on that, but there must be a word. There must be some neurology terminology around it. But that's definitely a thing, right? We see it all the time.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
But that second punch, you wouldn't have got dropped by that if that was the first one.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I was talking about it a bit with my new show, the Dan Hardy Breakdown show.
I was going to mention that, yeah.
Well, you know.
There you go.
I was talking about it with Stipe when he fought Maldonado. So in an early exchange, he hit him with like a weird short lead punch and dropped him, like buckled his legs. But Maldonado stood up and kind of backtracked to the fence. And Miocic chased him down, but then before he kind of started to unload, he waited and he stepped back and he was like, I'll wait.
Hmm.
And then 20 seconds later, he knocked him out.
Yeah.
And it was like, there is, I mean, yeah. And it lasts, I mean, I think if you get knocked out in succession in fights in a short period of time, I think it can last for
it's obviously being knocked out is a protective mechanism, right? He's right, I'm shutting everything down because there's been some trauma I need to shut down and reset. But it's almost like your body's too efficient. It's like, oh, I've got more efficient at this now because it's happened already.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to shut down really quick. And that's sort of the like chinny a type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, getting knocked out is a protection mechanism,
yeah,
though,
right,
isn't it? So
yeah.
I guess it's like, ooh, you know.
Yeah, I'll just do that quicker.
Yeah.
Because it's the
which is probably why people that have been knocked out hard a few times seem to be easier to knock out.
Like, so you the get phrase, chinny, don't
oh, yeah, they, oh, their jaw's gone.
Yeah.
You know, their chin's
gone. Yeah, interesting. So, yeah, again, yeah. Once again, you're right. Marion Renault just couldn't quite get. I thought she did all right, though. Chasson was, she's awkward, isn't she? And she's tough.
But then Renault's probably, I mean, she's.
It was a good back and forth. A lot it of was good. It was a good back and forth.
It's four in a row now, though, for Renault.
Yeah.
And she's.
And at that stage in her career where she might be her last chance, mightn't it? She got whacked on it. She got her nose broke, and then you could see how uncomfortable she was after that. She kept getting caught on it.
I had my nose broken in a Thai boxing match once, and it was. It's just, then you've just got this like this button that's sensitive all the time. And I don't know, it's such a weird feeling getting punched on a broken nose.
It's like, grinding.
Because you can feel some movement in there and blood going down your throat. It's not pleasant. Tai Tuivasa.
Man. He
looked in good shape as well. In good shape for Tai.
You could tell
he'd lost weight. You could tell he'd slimmed down a bit.
He's a handful, isn't he?
I wonder how many times he's pissed the bed since.
Who knows? He's probably still on the piss now.
Yeah, probably.
No, he's a good character. And in fact, fair play to Hunslucker for stepping up on that short notice to fighting someone you know is a gunslinger.
And trying to sling guns with him.
I mean, off what you said the last time we chatted about Tai is about sort of building him, giving him the right opposition to build him up a little bit and give him a little bit of time in the game. Where do you go with him now? Who do you give him? It's not, there's no gimmies in that division, is there?
No, there aren't. Let me just pull the rankings up. I'm not sure where he's not. Is he in the rankings at the moment?
I'm not sure. He must be pretty low.
Yeah.
High, whichever way you see it.
Come on. Heavyweight. Yeah, he's outside the top 15. So like, you've got to think you start nudging him towards the top 15. I mean, like, do you give him someone like an Olenek who's kind of older, on the downturn of their career, or do you give him someone young like Pavlovich who's, you know, in contention and, you know, test where Pavlovich is at?
Fun fight with Tom Aspinall.
It would be a very fun fight with Tom Aspinall, yeah. But then I think Tom, because of the wins he's had recently, he maybe needs to look up the food chain a bit.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, perhaps like someone that's coming off a loss between, you know, sort of 8 and 15 would be good. Oh, what's Walt Harris on at the moment? He's lost a couple in a row, hasn't he? Might be an interesting one. Walt Harris tied to Tuivasa.
Yeah. Yeah. Ty could solve that problem, I think.
Yeah. Like Augusto Sakai, maybe. I like Chris Daukaus, but again, I'd like to see him continually progress up a bit.
Yeah.
Because I think he's got wicked fast hands for the division and he's got a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. Even other being an interesting one. Did he fought you not before?
I thought he'd fought Olenek before. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
Let me have a quick look at his record. You know what? Before the co-main event, I tweeted. I was like, Sonkin, I don't think we've seen a fraction of what he's capable of. And then Max Griffin puts on the best performance of his career so far.
He
lost to Ivanov. Maybe that's a rematch.
Yeah, there's just it was a nicely timed right hand by Max, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That wobbled him and then just 1-2 and it was done. You know, Canan's got a really nice rear foot teep, but it's not really a teep, it's more like a hinge.
Mm.
Like he hinges to the midsection. You can see there's like tension in that leg as it comes through.
Yeah.
It isn't like a push, kick, it's like a hinge kick.
Really nice, front kick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but off his rear foot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it'd still be a front kick. It'd be called in Taekwondo, it'd be called an apchagi.
Right.
And you hit with the ball of your foot.
Yeah.
You snap it into the target instead of it being any kind of push.
Yeah, yeah. It's very cool. I like it.
It's difficult to do. It's like, 'cause it's a breaking technique in Taekwondo.
Right.
So they tilt the board just a tiny bit down so you kick up into it.
Cool.
But you've got to make sure you pull your toes back, otherwise you'll.
Oh, Max was funny, like. As he was giving it the old, oh, you asleep, motherfucker. Yeah. And he turned around, see how much trouble he's in. Oh, I was like, I hope you're all right, though.
Yeah.
Well, your boy Dawson was good, eh?
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah. It's tough, durable,
tricky.
Quit.
Sometimes it's tricky, wasn't
and
he?
And I tell you what, durable. Yeah, he is, man. Yeah. I mean, is he 40 now? But he's been in and around for a while. He's just been inconsistent because of injuries.
Yeah, Felder gave it the commentator's curse. He was like cussing out his right hand.
Yeah.
His overhand right. It was like, you know, you're gonna have to set that right hand over. They're like, boom, lands the right hand. Boom, lands the right hand again. He's like, yeah, what do you do?
Yeah, I tell you what, James Krause in his corner was good.
Mm.
Like that speech he gave between rounds. Like
he was.
If you're a young fighter, you could record that and play that to yourself before your last round of sparring and be like, you know what, you're right. I gotta go and get it.
Yeah.
Gotta go and get it. And he reinforced those, like, it a few times.
Gorilla swipes that he finished that fight with. Yeah, really. Impressive, eh?
Yeah, I like him. I like him.
He's a bit rudimentary, the striking. He's got some significant work to do, I think. But, you know, he's how old
he's
is he?
He's with the right guy as well.
12 years old or something. He's going to, you know, he's going to get that. He's going to get that experience. He's going to get those training hours logged.
Yeah.
And I think he'll, you know, he's the right shape and the right, he seems to have the right mentality to do something, isn't he?
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah. 94 he was born. Oh. So he's, what, 26?
Yeah, right, he's not as young as... He seems younger.
Yeah. Still got plenty of time, though. And if he's working on striking with James Krause...
Yeah, be a fast level up, won't
he? Yeah, for sure.
Man, Street Yanis was good, weren't he?
Yeah.
Like, really good.
Yeah.
Measured, accurate, fluid... Tough man,
and all of his mannerisms as well as the way he fights, the way he stands, and it's just so Masvidal.
It's weird, isn't it? So similar, isn't it?
It's weird.
He does that. I mean, I don't have to tell you this, but he does that thing where he like flirts with the edge of range, and he's edge of range, he's out of range, he's out of range again, he's out of range again. The third time, he's just slightly in range, and then he's figuring it, and the next thing you know, he's in range enough to do some damage. Yeah. It's like a diversion tactic, innit?
Mm.
It was for some reason watching him, it seemed like you could see him doing it. You're like, oh, I know what he's doing there. He's playing with your distance here, and then next minute he was in there and landing. He's impressive. I've not seen a measured approach like that. He seemed really measured. He knew exactly what he was doing, how he was going to go about it.
Yeah, calm all the way through as well. You know, very, very measured. And Gustavo Lopez is good. I mean, he's got Giff in his corner. Jimmy Giff was in his corner. He's a great coach. But he was just kind of shut down by the range play of Yanez.
Yeah.
And it's something I noticed, like, obviously I've spent the last couple of days making clones of Stipe and Ngannou in my head.
Is that for your own show?
That's, yeah.
Your new own, the new one?
That's it. Yeah, it's
where can you see it?
It'll be on BT Sport.
Oh, nice.
It'll be on BT
Sport. Congratulations.
YouTube. It might be up now by the time we get the podcast up. It will be, in fact. Stipe's got a very interesting stance, which I think suits him more because he's a heavyweight than anything else. But there is a similarity in the way that Masvidal stands. And I know we're going off on a bit of a technical tangent here, so bear with us. But... Well, you can watch this for the upcoming main event. Stipe stands much heavier on his rear leg. Like, his front leg's kind of out there almost to tempt them to kick it. It's weird how he stands. But what it does is, because he walks people down, it's like he's got one foot out the door as he's walking them down. Right. Remember that, because I'm going to use that. It, like, as he walks them down, it's like he's kind of leaning on his back foot. It's like, if you come at me, I'm gone.
Yeah.
But if you keep backing up, I'm going to keep walking towards you.
Yeah,
and he just like he creeps forward, and then he forces them to a bit like Peter Yan.
How are people not just blast doubling through him because they're on their back foot because he's pressuring up?
But then he's like counterbalancing himself. I mean, a little most bit. Guys don't want to take him down.
Yeah.
The interesting thing will be if Stipe beats Ngannou, I would like to see him fight Curtis Blaydes because that's a different kind of opponent. Different kind of opponent to DC, who barely used his wrestling when they faced each other.
Yeah.
Like that was much more about like pace. And like tying him up and hitting him with looping shots on the inside and poking him in the fucking eyes.
It was mainly about eye pokes.
It was mainly eye pokes.
It's funny. I was watching that fight yesterday, and again we've touched on it previously. But when you get really elite in sport, you can just stop doing all the fundamental rules that you would use to teach someone that sport. Like no one's teaching anyone to strike like DC strikes.
No one. No.
Because he doesn't strike. You know, the textbook way of doing it. In fact, at one stage, he threw a right hand and he, like, did, you know, when they're temping bowling, their foot, like, slides out the back. I was like, wow, don't ever teach anyone that.
No, I know. It's weird,
but,
though.
But like, effective, like, 30 seconds later, I think he dropped Stipe with a right, like, a ugly sort of right hand over the top with a load of power in it.
Mm.
Yeah,
and
it's amazing.
Like, if you look at the way that he knocked Stipe out the first time and the punch that he threw, like swims the underhook and then comes rocks over with a hook that's kind of, his palms turned down, he just kind of clubs him on the side. Like there's so many things in MMA that work that we're still trying to figure out how they work and why they work. Yeah. But I think that like the reaching out that DC does to close range down, like that's something that you saw John Jones do a lot. And I wonder whether that was something DC experienced and was like, this is not nice.
Yeah.
Like I remember John Jones mentioning it once in an interview and then never mentioning it again because I think he gave away a bit too much, but he called it locking horns.
Interesting.
And what it, and if you remember the Rashad Evans fight, he walked him down, he put his hands out, and the tendency is, like, if somebody walks out and they put their hands towards you, the tendency is you go, okay. And it's like you start reaching for their hands
as well.
So
what's the play? Disengage.
Yeah, disengage.
Just don't play it at all.
Back up and move in and then move out. But the tendency is to, like, stand and to reach, and then as they reach, they're coming around the sides.
Yeah.
And that's what DC does so well. And because he rocks as well, they're trying to throw straight punches to stop him, and he's coming side to side.
Yeah.
It's a bit, what's it called? Customato Tyson peekaboo style, but with outreached hands at a closer range.
I mean, it's effective, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's one of those...
Especially for flicking.
Yeah. Actually, flicking right in the eyeball, didn't he?
Yeah, that was the first fight. First one was a flick. Second one was a thumb sticking out from underneath his glove. Yeah. But then Stipe got him back with just a straight finger jab.
Man, you're not getting away with that now.
No.
It's interesting that there's a clear, they're clearly going after it.
Yeah.
I think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, you've got to. It's got to be fixed, you know. People have already lost eyes.
Yeah, for real. I mean, going back to Yanez, I was going to sort of say, you can get things twisted in your head as a S&C coach or a physical performance coach. You get things, I always recommend to like interns and assistants that I've worked with to go and do jiu-jitsu and go and do mixed martial arts.
So you can feel it. And
so you get the concept of what power, mechanical power is and the application of power is, because Yanez didn't throw a hard shot. There was no like real genuine power in that. It was timing. It was timing and placement. That's what it was. And when you're in the world of gym strength, you're all about capacity and all that mechanical power, and you just got to make sure that your mind is open enough to understand that it's not, more power is great, but unless you're applying it, then it's, you know, it's just wasted power. I just thought that was a great example of, you know, that's not the hardest punch in the world he's throwing there.
You know what, talking the hardest punches, like, because obviously we're going to move on to the next event, that analogy that they gave of Ngannou. So I got into that a little bit. I went back and watched the old press conferences just to kind of read them both and kind of their mood. And like Stipe played it down as if he wasn't bothered. But you could tell he was pissed off that he was being, that Ngannou was being celebrated as, oh my God, he's the next biggest thing.
Yeah.
And like, because you can tell, because he kind of raises his eyebrows when he's a bit uncomfortable. And he was sitting like, angry,
I love it.
You know,
I love that reaction in him. Like, motherfucker.
You'll see, like, exactly. Right. Yeah, no, let's see. But then, like as it was, like, so this was, I can't remember who was filming it. It was a different angle because the normal angle was locked off on Dana, and Dana was reading out this thing that had been presented to him from these tests, and it was like, so getting hit by a punch from Ngannou is like getting hit by a Ford Escort with a 96 horsepower engine going full speed. And whenever, I'm on Google, okay, 96. Okay, so a 96 horsepower Ford Escort travels about 113 miles an hour. You don't need to travel at someone 113 miles an hour to knock them out.
No.
But then the other thing is I'm sitting in Stipe's seat now, listening to that with Ngannou on the other side of the podium and listening to all everybody in the crowd go, oh, you know what I mean? And you're like, you're going to drive that Ford Escort on my head. That's what you're going to try and do. And he's like just kind of processing it. But his process, and same with DC, like when DC saw Ngannou charging towards Rosenstruik and knock him out, like most people look at that and they go, gee, if that was flying at me, I wouldn't be able to stop it. There's nothing I could do to like to negate that power. DC just went, I'd have taken him down at that point.
Right. DC went up in my estimations massively because someone questioned, it was just a joke. It was just a joke between whoever was on the panel. And he went, I'm not scared of anyone. And it was so fast. It was so genuine. He was like, no, it's fine. I'd deal with that.
Yeah.
You know what? I'd have a good crack at dealing with
that.
And it was a genuine, genuine reaction. I was like, he would have a go at that.
He would.
He's not scared.
Because that's the thing is like, he looks at Ngannou, Stipe looks at Ngannou, and maybe a couple of other people in the division. I still think Curtis Blaydes would feel like he can beat Ngannou. And like, I think they would look at him and go, I can solve that problem.
Mm.
You know, I have the tools to do it. I have the size to do it. I have the experience to do it.
Let's come back around to this because that feeds into obviously the next bit of it. And I agree.
Would you want to talk about Brunson Holland?
Well, yeah, I mean, we could touch on it, can't we?
What happened?
I just think that's me wrestling judo Jimmy Warhead. You know what I mean? You get to a point where you go, look, I can't do anything. I'm stuck. There's just no point to this anymore.
Yeah, but he wasn't trying.
But he was trying, and then he couldn't do anything. He was like, oh God, I'm bored of this. I can't do anything. You're not going to finish me.
Mate, he was acting weird all week. I know he's quirky, and I know he's kind of silly, and that's his thing. But there was an additional level of odd this week.
You reckon?
Yeah, there was.
I don't know, man. Maybe he just knew this was the way it's going.
It was like he'd either like built Brunson up in his head as the guy that was going to be most problematic if you met him, or
yeah.
I don't know. It was weird. There was just like this, like at the weigh-ins, he was like looking up and down, talking about shaving his chest, and
the chat to Habib, man. In the mid-fight, yeah, in between
which was
rounds.
Funny at the end of the first round,
yeah.
But then at the end of the second round, his corner team was starting to get pissed off. Like, you can see one guy's like trying to stand in his way, and he's going, like, dude, you've got to go out there and win.
You're losing. Yeah. You're actually losing this. Yeah. I don't know.
It was odd. It was like, I understand if you play the game as part of a game plan, but once he'd done it for two rounds, I'm like,
Yeah, it's like that. You know when someone says something funny and then they say it again, and you're like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
You were funny that first time. Yeah. Just leave it, mate.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just thought he gave up. I just thought he didn't have a way to get out of the controlling nature of Derek, and he was just like, it's too much effort for me to do this. I'll just take the loss, the non-damaging loss, because he wasn't really getting particularly hurt, was he?
No, but he wasn't getting hurt. He wasn't tired.
Yeah,
like he just didn't do anything.
That's the sort of thing that doesn't get you a fight for a while, isn't it?
No.
You know, from a promoter's point of view, you're like, this is the worst thing you could have done.
Absolutely. And then that interview he did afterwards, and he was like, yeah, no, I'm not really bothered about being the champion. Yeah. I'm just here to have fun. I'm like, it's not fucking spring break, dude.
Yeah. Like, go to Disneyland.
It's the UFC, man. Like be a contender or make way for someone else that wants to be a contender.
But, you know, that might be a protective mechanism. Maybe. You know, that might be him. This is his like little story he's going to tell himself and everyone else that he's not bothered.
But that's... You know. That's the problem. But that then, aside from the performance not being what we expected it to be, that also is a signifier that, like, mentally he's not ready for the top of the division. Like, and you know, maybe he will be. How old is it? Maybe he will be at some point. But right now, he just crumbled under that pressure.
Yeah,
92.
I think I said in the preview. The way he is, the way he fights, I just don't see him as the champ. I can't see that. Personality is the champ, you know. He's too unpredictable, and to be a champ, you need a level of not predictability in terms of when I'm fighting you, I know what you're doing, but in terms of stability of your character and your routines and your regimen, you have to have a certain level of predictability about you, or at least stability.
Yeah,
predictability maybe not the right word.
I mean, the thing is, like, he worked hard throughout 2020. Like, he had five fights in 2020 and five wins. And culminating with that Jacare finish.
Yeah.
And that was such an odd finish. But then we're going to go back to a conversation we were having.
Maybe he's just up in his own head, like thinks he's this superstar or something, I don't know.
Maybe. Or maybe he just covered too much ground. Maybe he got too far too fast because he was fighting too regularly. Like, I mean, so like Anthony Hernandez, Joaquin Buckley, he benefited off the Joaquin Buckley fight because obviously Buckley's stock rose very quickly after the Fight Island knockout. Darren Stewart was a great fight, an absolute war, and we know Darren Stewart is a heavy-handed dude. I can't say his name. Ontrivenuros? He's only had one fight in the UFC. I don't know a great deal about the guy, but it's not a top 15 name. And then he got the fight against Jacare, kind of because he'd been so active and he was there and we plugged him in, and that's the feeling. And then TKO Jacare from the bottom,
and then got loads of press about it, and everyone was shouting about it.
Maybe it just went crazy too quickly for him.
Yeah, maybe you need to sort of sit on those five wins, and you know, maybe fight twice this year, and then look at someone that level.
Is he right up in the rankings? is 10 in the rankings. See, this
like if you're if you're 10 at the rankings and you're not taking it seriously and not bothered about being the champ.
He's above Chris Weidman. And I know Chris Weidman's an older champ, which is crazy to say because he's not really that old.
Seems old, though. He seems like he's been around forever.
He's had a hard career.
Yeah.
You know, he had a hard career.
Like, yeah. It's weird when you say that name. It feels like a different generation of rosters.
Yeah. The Phil Baroni generation.
Well, we've got an answer for Phil.
He calls me out once a month. Mate, literally. He calls me out. He sends me a private message once a month. Dude, like, we should fight. Why? Why, Phil?
Jimmy will fight him in a phone box in Colville if he wants. Just send him over.
Yeah, and he'd get just as much damage.
I don't think he wants that. I don't think he wants that heat. Jimmy will beat him up 100%.
There we go.
So, yeah, it was a weird end to that card, wasn't it?
It was a bit anticlimactic. I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, it was a good fight. So I didn't enjoy the card, but it was just a bit of a funny end, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There we go.
260.
Yeah, this is fun.
Jared Gooden, no relation to John, against Abubakar Nurmagomedov, relation to Khabib.
Yeah.
How about that? A non-relation of John Gooden against a relation. I felt a bit bad for Abubakar. I called his debut against Zavada. And you know, the thing is, like, that name is such a brand in itself in the MMA world. Like, he had so much to live up to.
The look on his face when he tapped.
Oh.
I think he thought he was going to have to explain himself to the Dagestani big top. Do you know what I mean? He's like, oh, God, I want to get fed to the pigs here. Do you know what I mean? He just looked devastated. Yeah. He was like, can't believe I just tapped. I'm so screwed. Yeah.
Mate, I tell you, it looked the same was when Ankalaev tapped to Paul Craig in the last second. He had that look on it. And then he got a telling off by his coach.
I don't care if he's Muhammad Amar Bruce Lee. You're done, son.
Fuck, yeah. But I mean, the thing is, it's such a name to carry.
Yeah, it's like an honour. It's like an honour thing as well, yeah. Surprised to see him back.
Right?
Yeah.
It's such a name to
carry. I thought he might disappear.
But this is a far more interesting fight for him. A far more suitable fight for him. Zavada, anybody with the name Zavada in Europe, you know they're good MMA fighters. Him and his brother have done a lot of damage on the UK European scene, and so he's an easy guy to underestimate, especially when the fight hits the floor. And it was a beautiful triangle. Was it triangle armbar?
Gooden's it's funny, man. He's muscled, isn't he?
Yeah,
but he's not particularly fast, and his cardio seems pretty good.
Particularly fast. That's what I noticed.
I mean, you know, from a physiological point of view, if you fiber type tested him, you'd think he'd come out slightly different to what you would perceive. Yeah. You know, he's lean and he's muscle, but he's not very quick.
No,
he doesn't twitch at a rate you would immediately sort of think by looking at him.
But his conditioning looked good.
Yeah.
And he's durable. He took a lot of body kicks from Alan Jaban.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He was one of my old sparring partners, Alan was, back in...
How was he?
Yeah. Yeah, wait. He came in. He was training at Legends. He was doing like 10th Planet, and then he was and some Thai boxing and stuff, and was a model. I mean, that was what he was doing. Do you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, he's like he's fighting pro and he's winning fights.
He's Canadian.
And he's knocking dudes out. No, he's from Louisiana.
Okay.
Yeah, good dude. Good fighter and a southpaw, which is why he was good for me to work with because of the Marcus Davis training camp. We worked together for that.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't massively sort of impressed watching him, really. I thought he was all right.
Yeah.
He's a mid-tierer.
He's a good one.
It's funny, like, I would probably pick Abubakar, but is that just because of his name? Do you know what I mean? If you go on just from what I've really seen, you know, he got finished pretty quickly by David.
Yeah.
So am I just picking that because of that's his name?
I mean, maybe.
But you would think he is of a certain level. You know, everyone gets caught every now and again. But you would think being in that crew and, you know, being around the people he's training with, you would think he's of a certain level.
And you would think he's coming into this one with something to prove.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. Like it wouldn't surprise me if he goes on a streak here. I mean, you know, the reality is it wasn't the first time he's picked up a loss in his career. I mean, he's got... What is he, five losses on his record now? I'm just looking down Oh, I'm sorry, I'm looking at Jared Gooden. Abubakar's got 3 losses on his record, so it wasn't like his debut was the first loss on his record, you know, but on that stage, that name's already been established, and I bet that carried some weight with it.
It's whereas, like, you know, inferred credentials, like he's been around these people, and the inference across is, you know, he's got to be pretty good.
Yeah. But then I'm looking down Jared Gooden's record, so he's got triangles, armbars, rear naked chokes, on his record, he's got a couple of flying knees and a Superman punch. But then his losses are unanimous decision. There's one that's 53 seconds strikes against the fence. But then all the rest are decisions. So, like, he might be just a very durable guy who is quite capable of grappling with him.
Hmm.
Might end up being a bit of a kickboxing match again. Like, Abubakar is a well-rounded fighter. He's got good striking as well as grappling. Yeah. Like, you know, he's got the wrestling you would expect, but
I would feel he'd have the speed advantage then from what I've sort of seen. It might be, I'm swayed. I'm swayed by the inferred credentials. I think I'll.
Deserved. We'll see.
Abu can win that.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
What's up next? Gillian Robertson against Miranda Maverick. This is really good matchmaking. So Gillian Robertson, obviously, she always looks rather uncomfortable on the feet. She will strike, but she would rather not. But her jiu-jitsu is very strong. Like, trained by Din Thomas, very slick on the ground, grappling for MMA. Really talented. If she gets it to the floor...
it's trouble.
I still think it's competitive.
Yeah.
But Miranda Maverick's got good striking.
Really good. Yeah. Thought.
I mean, you watched the JoJo fight where she opened her up.
I thought. I thought she's clearly... she's clearly faster than her, sharper than her, and I think she moves a little bit better than her standing.
Yeah.
But I think even on the floor, if it's not necessarily going to the floor is a problem for her, but if she lets Robertson grapple on her terms, she's in trouble.
Yeah.
Because if Gillian gets that top position, she's a nightmare, isn't she? She's very, very dominant from that top position.
Yeah.
But off her back, she's obviously competent, but she's not as much as a threat, I didn't think.
Yeah.
I think if Miranda can maintain her range and not overcommit and then get doubled or whatever and put on her back, I think she'll come through pretty good.
Mm.
But if Gillian takes her down and gets that top position, she's in for a long night, I think.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a challenging fight for Gillian. I mean, she's very good on the floor, and obviously, you know, you would expect her to win if it hits there. But Miranda Maverick, obviously, she's got good striking, close and long range striking. She's physically very strong.
Mm.
And when it hits the floor, you know, I can't remember what her grade is. She's graded in jiu-jitsu as well. It might be a brown belt. She's actually studying for her PhD as well at the same time. I mean, she's like one of those proper overproductive people that was in Fire Island doing lectures, like watching lectures on.
In what do you know?
I can't remember, but it's something that would melt my brain.
Yeah,
you know, something. You know, she's a very sharp individual. She thought her career was coming to an end at one point because she had an eye injury, and they told her that it couldn't be fixed. And then she ended up going through a surgery with a specialist, and it's now back to normal. But now she doesn't spar hard. Like, she does a lot of play sparring, and it's, you know, she's got a real tight knit group around her that, like, very much protect her and look out for her best interests. And it seems to be working very well for her. I think
we're still playing with those concepts, aren't we? But there's something in it.
Mm.
Tight circle, play spar, minimize the non-essential head trauma.
Yeah.
And
now everyone's used to living in bubbles. You know, it's easier to keep the group smaller. Nah, we're still in a bubble. It's the pandemic, COVID. Fake, put your face mask on. Which way are you going?
Maverick, I think.
I agree.
I think there's a couple of ways for Gillian to win this, but I think if Miranda is smart and doesn't get overexcited, I think she'll go all right.
Yeah,
she could light her up a little bit standing, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
If she nullifies Robertson's takedown, she'll be able to push her back up against the fence.
I think so.
And that's when we'll see her, that Thai boxing, beat the legs up, knee the body.
Mm.
Well, here we go. Knee to the body, that's how I'll call it. this next is the one's a good one as well. Shane Young against Omar Morales. Morales is, he's a big, powerful individual. I think he spent a lot of his career at lightweight. But like he's ready to go all the time.
Man, I like
him.
You
know what I mean?
Man, I really like him. He had a great one with Chikadze, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Chikadze's a flipping monster.
So Chikadze was his first fight at featherweight.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting move, given the fact that he was undefeated up to that point.
Mm. He got that calf beaten up, didn't he?
Yeah.
Bad.
And Chikadze sets a pace as well. But he's also very difficult to measure. You know, he's a difficult person to measure and manage because he's got a lot of kickboxing experience. He knows how to play those ranges. And I just, you know, my first thought would be to, like, how where's his head at in a new weight class? Mm-hmm. Like, he's just cut down to featherweight. We don't know why he did that, which, you know, would kind of paint some of the picture for us. But also, like, did he feel different? Did he have was the weight cut hard? Did he feel like he was going to gas? You just don't know where his head's at.
Yeah, man, I don't think this is a good fight for Shane Young to get back on the horse.
No.
With, I think this is a really tough fight for him. I mean, he looks, he's a good fighter. Shane's a great fighter, obviously coming out of City Kickboxing. Mm. But he got hit hard, didn't he, by
Ludovic Klein.
Mm. Like, really hard, like rocked him. Beautiful combination.
Yeah.
Head kick, left hook, uppercut, left hook. Did a fair bit of damage, didn't he? But this is just not a nice fight to try and get back in there and back on the horse.
Not really.
Not really.
He was backstage. There was a weigh-in, and it was like they'd weighed everybody in the morning, and they were doing the face-offs at the end of the weigh-in. So everybody has to be back downstairs, and he came back into the weighing room and sat down, and everyone's kind of lining up in order of when they're going to walk out and face off. And everyone's kind of chatting and talking and rehydrating and stuff. And he's just sat like a couple of rows back from the front, and he's just sat like that. And he's like, keeps sticking his tongue out. He was like properly in the zone. Yeah, he was nice. Yeah. I like him. I mean,
that feeds, he's got a good feeds skill into set him. As well. That he's potentially too tough for his own good. You know, he maybe sticks his head where it doesn't need sticking sometimes, and you know, if he took that energy and put it to more evasive strategies, maybe I think he's definitely got the attacking skill set to do some damage, but he just can't take what he takes. Mm. I don't think.
I agree. I mean, you know, a decision lost to Volkanovski, you can probably take some confidence from the fact that, aside from, I mean, his last fight, you know, he got caught, he got knocked out, and the other thing people were complaining about is that Klein came in quite heavy.
Yeah.
I think it was a short notice fight, but he came in like 3-4 pounds over.
Yeah, you can't imagine Shane Young saying, nah, don't, we're not doing it. But yeah.
Yeah, it ended up being a catch weight at 150. Let me have a quick look what Ludovic Klein came in at. Which way are you thinking?
Yeah, I think Morales wants it. I feel, you know, I like Shane Young. I think he's a good fighter. Like I say, I just think this is a bad matchup for him in the context of where he's at in his career.
And featherweight divisions are, I mean, there aren't any easy fights.
Horrendous,
in featherweight, are there?
Horrendous.
So you think Morales is going to take it?
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's a war for 3 rounds and it ends up being a split decision. And it could go either way. I think they're going to be quite evenly matched.
Mm.
They're both equally aggressive, and they're both equally take the
I
same
might
kind
be a smoke
of risks.
On this card,
yeah, it might be. They're both big risk takers. Morales, like, he gets impatient and you can see him. He's like a dog pulling on a lead. You know? Yeah. He's like, but then Shane Young's the same. They just both take risks, but I think maybe, I mean, Shane Young's paid for those risks in his career a bit more than Morales has.
Yeah.
Good fight.
Yeah, very good.
Marc-Andre Barrio against Abu Azaitar.
Yeah. This is the Azaitar brother that didn't break the bubble, right?
This is the middleweight Azaitar
brother. The bigger.
Yes.
Hencher one.
Yes.
Man, he's strong.
He is strong.
He's really strong.
It does work against him sometimes, though.
Yeah.
Because he does use that strength.
Yeah.
And that's where it works
against
him.
He's not cultured in what he does, is he? He's just power,
horsepower,
strength.
Yeah.
Everything's at 90% plus.
Yeah.
He's just wailing, but you know, he has had some success doing it. It's just
he's had a lot of success doing it. On the flip side, Marc-Andre Barrio is one of those guys that can have a 15-minute slugfest and still do push-ups at the end. And his losses have always been like hard-fought, grinding losses, grinding fights. I'm just looking down as Itar's record. Like, I mean, he's starched a few people.
I mean, I just think anyone that is like Itar is good and up to a level.
Yeah.
You know, that power and that strength sort of mask the technical inabilities to a level until you get to that level and then you get picked apart a little bit. So he might still be at that level. I'm not sure he's reached the echelons where this is going to become a problem for him.
Well, I mean, you look at Barrio's record. So he came into the UFC from TKO and he was a two division champ in TKO. I think he was welterweight and middleweight. But he came in, he was on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He was on an 8-fight win streak when he joined the UFC. But then he fought Andrew Sanchez, who's a heavy wrestler, Jocko, who's one of those guys that he's always a really difficult fight because he's awkward and he manages distance really well. He's one that stands a bit like Stipe, actually, a bit heavy on his rear leg. And then Junyoung Park, who was another scrapper, and he had wars with all of them. He gets a win over Pejota and then it gets overturned for...
Dick pills.
Osterine.
Back at the dick pills again. Yeah.
So like,
dick pills will get you, aren't they?
Well, the one thing you've got to consider, though, he's got 3 losses and a no contest. Like, there's no coming back if he loses it.
No, this is it. I mean, the no contest was overturned.
No, it was a win for him overturned to a no contest because of the failed drug test. So that's a problem.
Yeah. That Osterine seemed to be in some stories about supplement contamination. That's what made me thought maybe it had been overturned.
It's not also from what I can see.
Dick pills quite a lot.
It's probably in a lot of things.
Yeah. There you go. Look, mate, this is, for me, it's a roll of the dice. I'm not blown away by either of them, really. I think Itar is at the level... I think this fight is still at the level where Itar's strength and power can probably get him through.
Yeah. Barrio's never been stopped, not even in his amateur career. Every single loss on his record's a decision. And the one against Jocko was a split decision.
Yeah.
Like you've got to think he's going to be durable and he's going to still be there at the end of the fight. So it's what damage can Itar do to him in that process to slow him down and get ahead on the scorecards. Like if he cracks him a couple of times first round, he might just knock him out. It might just be done.
It seems like whether he's got the accuracy is a different conversation, but it seems like the power to knock people out for sure.
It's the application that is what costs him.
He even wrestles with strength.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's not the most technical wrestler. No. Get off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess you can see it going a couple of ways, classic ways, really. Itar either knocks him out pretty early or he tries to, and then he's gassed and then he gets down, TKO, done. Yeah.
Quite possible. It could, I mean, it literally is a coin toss. So what's your coin toss saying?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll go with...
first round knockout or...
First round knockout. Give us something to cheer about.
Okay. Jessica Penne against Hannah Goldie. It feels like it's been ages since Penne was in the...
I think it is. She hasn't won since 2014.
Is that right?
That's a long time, isn't it?
It's a long time. It's a lot of pressure. Yeah.
I think there's been a lot. There's a lot going on. I know I say this phrase a few times. I do mean this with the utmost respect. I'm just not that excited about the fight. I don't feel like either of them.
Did she test positive for something?
Yeah,
she did, didn't she?
Yeah.
Okay, that was it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's a lot going on. I think she's on a 3-fight skid, and then maybe tested positive. I think she'd do a year.
Oh, I mean that's the theme of this last fight as well. I mean, you look at those losses, Joanna, Andrade. I mean, Danielle Taylor's tough, but like that, I felt like that was a winnable fight for her. Hannah Goldie's got a lot less experience, 5-1.
Yeah, and she's in ridiculous shape. Yeah. In ridiculous shape. Her Instagram is almost. I shouldn't be looking at it. I shouldn't be watching it.
Make you feel bad about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Look, I think Hannah's in that development stage of her career, isn't she? She's a bit janky with her striking and her movement and stuff.
And that loss to Miranda Granger. Granger's really awkward. She's got like long range Thai boxing that's got really weird timing. And
yeah,
you know what I mean. It was just. I think she's going to be. I think she's a very physical fighter. The problem with Jessica Penne is that she's very good on the ground. Like she's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. This could be Hannah Goldie diving into a submission.
Yeah, because I mean Hannah is jacked, but I don't watch her and think she's. I don't think she's particularly athletic. She's jacked for sure. Very very low body weight, good muscle mass, but I don't see her move particularly athletically. Mm. Yeah, I mean that quite possibly could be the way she gets in the grapple and Jessica ties her up. Yeah.
Which way are you going? I'll let you pick it. You don't seem too excited.
I'm just genuinely not very excited. They just didn't. I just watched them both. I was like, yeah, whatever, really. Let's go with Jessica.
Okay.
You know, you got to think that time she's had off, man. She would have been training hard to make a point coming back, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of time to improve, ratchet your skill set up.
Yeah, and you know, she went into the Joanna fight. Like a lot of people canceled her out in that one, and she hung in there for long enough. Like she was stopped standing. She got her nose broken with an elbow.
Yeah.
You know, she like
and Joanna is like
she's vicious.
She's a good test for anyone, isn't she?
This next one's fun. Do you want to go have a go at the names or?
Oh, which one are you talking about?
Modestus.
Yes. I can go, hold on, I'm on the wrong sheet. Oleksaychuk, and Bukauskas.
Yes.
I mean, we know Bukauskas, right?
Yeah, Cage Warriors champ. Yeah.
He's been on the European circuit a little bit. Yeah, oh man, he's a big athletic 205, isn't he?
He is massive.
He's massive.
He got dropped pretty bad by Jimmy Crute, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, talking of massive 205, Jimmy Crute's not small, is he? And he just, you know, he just timed. It was off a. It was a counter to a leg kick, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And the leg, it almost looked like he second guessed himself as he was throwing that leg kick. Just caught with that big overhand right.
Yeah.
And yeah, dropped him hard. Man, he looks like he just put together right as a 205er. Like he's sort of thick in the right areas. He's lean in the right areas. He moves pretty good.
6'3", 78-inch reach.
Yeah.
I mean, like he was excellent in Cage Warriors. He really was impressive. You know, stopping people in the first round with elbows, like even into the fourth round and you know, finishing people. A couple of rear naked chokes on his record as well. Like he is a well-rounded fighter. And that, and I'm not sure whether you remember his UFC debut against Michaelidis, where he'd stopped him against the... against the fence, and the dude sat up against the door of the cage and didn't get up. And then they opened the door, and he fell out the door. And the referee waved it off because he made no effort to get back to his feet. He was just kind of finished at the end of the first round.
It's a good matchup because
see Oleksaychuk, and I've had this conversation with his manager Pavel. Like he's undersized for this weight class.
Yeah.
He is quite small, but he hits really hard.
Is it a very I was going to ask you whether you feel like his movement strategy is efficient or inefficient. Is obviously it causes some problems because there's a lot of movement, but is it just a lot of movement or is it a calculated amount of movement and he's playing some games and he's trapping and he's manipulating with that movement? Because I know which way my sense is, it's one way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's dependent on who he's fighting, how he approaches them. And I think he realises that he is undersized for this weight class, so his speed and his movement is the benefit to him. Yeah. But then, like in some ways, and this is a huge compliment, so I hope he lives up to it, in some ways he reminds me of Fedor.
Right.
Like, especially when he's kind of on the front foot and he feels like he's got them, you know, he's got them backing up a bit. Like, he's just very relaxed in... Like everything he does, like the movement is maybe quite inefficient, but the actual application of the technique is quite nice. It's quite relaxed. I mean, the body shot against Gian Vellante was just perfectly timed and placed. And
do you want to do some geek physiology?
Go on then.
So there's a tension regulator in your muscles called the Golgi tendon, and it and to disinhibit the Golgi tendon gives you the ability to exert more power. And the way he's sort of fluid, it seems like, you know, naturally or I suppose trained, or anyone that gets trained to that point, when they're fluid, they've disinhibited the Golgi tendon. So the Golgi tendon is a rate limiter. So you don't want too much force to stop your muscles breaking. But if you can override that, then you get this nice fluid, high output, high levels of power being able to create it. And when I watch him, I was like, seems like he's disinhibited his Golgi tendon there. Very that's much it. So. There, he's anyway, in listen an, over.
Disinhibited his goldfish tendon. Yeah. We'll remember that for next time. There we go, kids.
There you
that's
go.
Interesting. Well, but you would say the same about Fedor as well, wouldn't you? He's so relaxed in the way that he fights.
Yeah, super relaxed.
Like he's not even, his face never changed.
And I mean, even from an energy cost point of view, if you're not holding tension, there's a cost to holding tension.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then that maybe energy is wasted in the movement. And if he can find a way to move a bit more efficiently, then.
Yeah. But he looks fluid, doesn't he? He looks fluid when you watch him. Dynamite in his hands.
I think if Modestus plays it right, he can make it very difficult for Alex Shager to get to him.
Mm.
But then if he doesn't use good movement and good weapons to manage the range between the two, I can see Oleg Shadrach kind of walking him down against the fence.
Wow.
And then the looping Pink. Shots come.
Yeah. I picked Bukauskas.
Did you? Yeah.
Probably because I'm in no way...
Fiercely patriotic. Yeah. I don't know, you're Lithuanian. Well, I mean,
You know, yeah, he came through the he came through our domestic scene, didn't he? And I think he...
You know, it's weird. It's sorry to cut you off. Apologies for the comment section as well. I know. When he came in to do his interview for that Jimmy Crute fight, because of his name, it was like when he started talking, he's got this like British accent. It's like a lot of people were like, oh, like Lithuanian, and he's just. I mean, he's been living in the UK for a long while now.
I think he'll go all right.
Yeah,
I think he'll go all right. He might even physically dominate him a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a big old unit, isn't he, for that weight?
He is. Talking of big old units and the same weight class as well.
Wow.
Alonzo Menafield against William Knight.
So this is rescheduled, isn't it? Because we've talked about this before.
We have talked about it before. Who would you pick last time? Do you remember?
Knight, I think.
Was it? Yeah. So you're going for Menafield this time, aren't
you? Yeah. Reason it the other way. Yeah. I mean, they're like carbon copies of each other in sort of... some ways, aren't they?
Do you take into account that Menafield's recently tested positive for COVID, and do you feel like that would have an adverse effect on his cardiovascular system?
It seems to with some people.
It does, doesn't it?
I mean, Hamzat is struggling bad, isn't he, by the sounds of it. Mm. It's such a new thing, I would have no real experience in it, but you would think anything that is...
You're not a qualified doctor.
No, well, you know, I may as well be in some ways, but... Fake it till you make it, at least.
I like Thompson's solution. I'm a doctor in everything but medicine.
you would think there'd be some sort of hangover, right?
Got a Thompson.
Yeah.
You would think. Yeah, yeah, you would think. I mean, even if there's a limitation to his ability to train.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be offset somehow. But then sometimes people are overtraining a little bit and they benefit from...
Like I'm hearing people with COVID, some people have a couple of days in bed and they're sort of all right.
Yeah.
Some people are... bedbound for a couple of weeks.
Or Mystery
and,
doesn't get it at all.
Well, yeah. Or yeah, if you blaze enough, it just washes over you.
I reckon it's the CBD is brushing his teeth with in the morning.
He's immune.
Yeah.
Maybe he's the cure.
I think he just passed straight through him.
I didn't even see you there. I mean, this is just juggernaut type stuff, isn't it?
It is, isn't
they're going to go out and...
It is.
Yeah, they're just two big dudes. I think Knight could probably pull this off, but it's going to be pretty close.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I'm leaning towards Knight a bit more. I feel like there is a little bit more. There's a little bit more direction in his techniques.
Did Menafield coming off a big knockout?
Yeah, Menafield's been knocked out by OSP.
A big one.
And he lost to Devon Clark one before.
Yeah. So I always think that's fascinating, the first one back after something that, you know, it shakes you.
Yeah.
You know, it shakes everyone.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting. I think he's been knocked out before.
No, he hadn't. Sort of these are his first two losses on his record. Whereas, like, you look at Menafield's record, so he picked up a loss at CCFC back in 2019, but was undefeated in three fights in 2020. And has got a variety of different rounds and finishes. Most of them by strikes. I think all of them by strikes, in fact. But across the rounds, first, second, third round, you know, late in the third round as well, 4-32. And then you also look at his amateur career, 7-1 as an amateur. So, you know, I think that he's a... And he's also got a Thai boxing match against Jorgen De Castro, who's heavyweight.
Oof.
Lost that one. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like maybe his technique's a little bit cleaner.
Mm.
And given the fact that Menafield does put his foot on the gas and cover a lot of distance, and he is aggressive with his striking, he might close distance down and actually run into the range of William Knight, because he's only 5'10", you know, 73-inch reach. It's not massive, especially for light heavyweight. And you talk about Modestus, you know. That's a lightweight stature if you're looking at like the frame of him. So light heavyweight, he's always going to be undersized as far as reach goes. He's got to find his way inside. But then Menafield might close that distance for him.
He's definitely making the weight via thickness than anything.
Depth.
Yeah. Yeah, go on then. We'll go in Knight, shall we? See how that goes.
Yeah.
Malarkey and Worthy. Is that next up?
Yeah, another good fight.
Yeah. I mean, I think we briefly touched on Jamie last week.
Mm.
He's fighting out of Ross's gym, isn't he? Central Coast MMA. Shout out to Ross Pearson and that factory they got going over there. Man, he loves a rock.
He does.
He proper loves a rock, doesn't he?
He's got to play it smart, though, with Worthy, because Worthy's beatable. You know, 7 losses on his record. He can get closed down and he can get hurt. You know, when he's been stopped, it's been... when he's lost, he's been stopped. Like, you look down his record. So he's like his last loss, Ottman Azaitar, first round finish, 133. And then you go back to his next one, Kyle Nelson and Anthony Rettig, 103, 106. I mean, these are losses I'm talking about. And then he's got a couple of losses in the second round as well. Like, he goes out there and gets after it. Mm. And Jamie Malarkey is the kind of guy that can get into a bit of a war for a couple of rounds and then grind you down in the third and get the finish.
I absolutely think this is Jamie's to win.
Yeah.
But he will have to pick him apart.
Yeah.
And if he does get tempted to do what he clearly loves doing, I mean, that fight with Brad Riddell, that was crazy.
Hell of a fight.
Yeah, that was a hell of a fight, yeah. Mm. And it almost the same with the Zayam or Zayme, whatever you say it.
Yeah.
I just really do think he should be able to win this. I'm not massively impressed by Worthy's movement or striking, but he is like a coiled spring, and he's just ready. If you just unlatch that latch, he's gonna fire pretty fast.
Mm. And that's the thing, is his 0-60 is much better than Jamie Malarkey's.
Yeah,
and Malarkey will walk himself into a fight.
Mm. If he plays it right, though, Jamie should win that. Definitely win that.
But if he plays it right, he's got to. It wouldn't do him bad to get in on the legs a little bit of Karma Worthy and tie him up. You know, kind of do what GSP did to BJ Penn.
Yeah.
You know, get a bit of lactic acid in the muscles and slow him down and make that coiled spring a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit less coiled.
A little bit less coiled. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hope Jamie and Ross, obviously in that gym, get this win. I feel like they should.
Yeah.
I feel like it's there to win. But, you know, you're always playing that game with power. We'll touch on it in the main event, but you're just playing that game with power, you know.
He's a gunfight kind of guy, Karma Worthy, which is why his record looks like it does. But, you know, always going to be fun to watch, because he always puts himself out there at harm's way to get his own knockouts. Also shows how confident he is in his power.
Mm.
Like, yeah, Malarkey's got to play it very, very cautious, but I would say that it's his, you know, it is a fight that he can take if he's smart.
Yeah.
This one is a very, very interesting fight. I've been big on Thomas Almeida for a long time, and he just kind of fell off
It's funny you say that. We've spoken about him, and then obviously doing some research for this, I went back and looking at his record, and it's took a bad turn, hasn't it? I hadn't really figured it.
There was a turning point where, because, so first of all, he's from Shootbox, And right. As you remember from back in the day, Shootbox, they're all about banging heads.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling that he took a lot of damage early in his career that he didn't need to, just purely because of the way he was fighting. And I think it made him very good very fast. And I think that's why his record when he came into the UFC was, what was it, 17-0? Like, he was clearly swimming in a tank full of sharks, and he was hanging with those sharks. And then when he turned pro, he was, exactly. Yeah. So there was a cost to it. And I remember, like, when he fought Brad Pickett, like, at that point, Brad Pickett was 25-10, he was. So he was already at a point where, there was a point where, he was starting to slow down a bit, starting to age a bit, maybe didn't need to be fighting someone that was 19-0.
Hmm.
He was lethal. And Brad caught him and hurt him. And as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, hang on. Like, he didn't take that shot as well as he should have done.
Right.
And I know Brad's got heavy hands. He does. He always has. But that, it wasn't a punch that I thought to myself, that was a heavy punch.
Hmm.
It was like it cuffed him and it just kind of dazed him. And all of a sudden I thought to myself, he's... Like it's going.
Too many.
Yeah, it's right, going.
Wow, he's had eye surgery as well. He's out for a year with his eye.
But I think in the long run that's going to benefit him, because that eye surgery is also giving his brain a time to rest. Yeah. And
he's solid, man. He's a solid fighter. And when I watch him, I'm like, man, you've got a legit skill set, and you're a good solid fighter. I mean. Flipping corners. Have you ever seen opinion shift so fast as it has with Shaw?
Crazy.
Like, everyone was about him.
Everyone.
Everyone was about him for a little while. After he'd knocked out Eddie Wineland, they sort of liked he was quirky and he was a gamer and he smoked weed and he had this cool thing going on. And then he basically had a lateral ankle sprain mid-fight against Marlon Vera.
Yeah.
Who's not a joke. Like, lateral ankle sprain, got beaten up by him, and then sort of said, I was undefeated at some stage post fight. And then everyone was like, we don't like you anymore.
Yeah.
You're out.
It was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird.
After a point, every comment I saw that had Sean's name on it was hate. It was wild.
Yeah. I don't know. But then, he wins here against Thomas Almeida in emphatic fashion, and everyone's back on the train. I think that was the problem, is that it was like he tried to make an excuse for the loss instead of just going,
I've done that ankle sprain multiple times, and it just feels like your ankle's dead.
Yeah.
It's just not there. There's nothing happening. And he sort of carried on, didn't he? He tried to start moving and, obviously got caught in the end, but harsh.
How do you think he matches up against Almeida?
It's
not been out for long since the Marlon Vera fight.
No, I think this
August
is...
of last year.
Yeah, man, it's a close fight. Because I like how Sean fights. I like where he's going.
Mm.
I don't think he's there yet, and I think he's got some development to do. And your guess is as good as mine whether he's in that mindset. He knows that, but I like what he's trying to be.
Yeah.
I do like what he's trying to be. I think he's going to be a good fighter if he keeps working. Depending on which Almeida this is, sort of dictates the fight. I think Sean is unorthodox enough and smooth enough with his unorthodox nature that he can cause some problems, he can pick some holes. But if you get that early Almeida coming in, who's tight and fast and, cuts hard angles and lets his hands go, it could be a rough night. I think maybe Sean just, in a razor.
See, I'm right on the fence about it, and I could go either way. And the reason I can see Thomas Almeida winning is because he's a very, very cleanly trained striker. And obviously I think the thing that's let him down is not what he's capable of, it's what he's what he's endured in his career so far. I think if he's had the rest and if he's healthy, I mean that last fight, to Martinez, although he didn't win it, I thought he looked good all the way through. And I think Martinez is much better than we, especially because he picked up a loss the other week. I think he's better than he thinks he is, and that everybody thinks he is at the moment. So it was, it was a rough fight, and it was, it's unfortunate that he didn't get it turned around with a win. But I don't think that devalued his performance a great deal. I think he still showed that he's good and that he's got it. I just don't think he was able to put it together on that night. But he's got very, very clean traditional striking.
Yeah.
And the downside to that is that this is not Muay Thai or boxing. And what is traditional and clean for Muay Thai and boxing seems to be a little bit vulnerable in MMA. Mm. And the thing that makes it vulnerable are the guys that don't move in those regular movement patterns.
Which is exactly what he got
exactly
coming out.
Which is exactly
what he does. Yeah.
Like, Martinez does a little bit. Like, he's a little bit kind of quirky and his hands are down and, like, he relies a bit more on his movement and stuff. Whereas, like, Almeida does much better against guys that are like, let's box. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then their movement's predictable, which means that his technique shines through.
Because he's crisper and sharper, and he's more linear. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my concern for him. But then, you know, he might go the smart way and clinch. And I do think he could probably do some serious damage to O'Malley on the floor. Because that creative nature that he's got on his feet, there's not a traditional foundation to it, which is why it can be so fluid. Because you can kind of throw something in there and he'll just figure out a way of making it work. He's not confined to the regular movement patterns that. But
I mean,
then,
I do think, you know, that who Sean is trying to be is probably the future.
Yeah.
Like, it won't be traditional. It will be effectively fight what you see and adapt, you know, real time adapt and what have you. I just wonder, it's hard to tell where he's at on his journey and who Tomas is when he comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd probably pick Sean just, very close though.
Yeah, I'm leaning slight in that direction. I mean, maybe partly because Almeida's been on a rough form of recent, but yeah, I mean, it's Almeida's got to push the pace and close him down and force him. You know, like if I was in Almeida's corner, I'd say go and watch Nassim against Marc Antonio Barrera.
Yeah,
because Nassim was all over the place, and then he fought Barrera, who's just like, nope, we're boxing. Where's your front foot? I'm gonna stand on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like good technique can overwhelm flair, but it's got to be applied gradually and consistently and effectively for rounds in order to shut it down.
Yeah. Right. We'll see. We'll see, for sure.
Co-main event.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, very similar records, considering one is a rising contender and the other one's a former
been
champion.
Forever, yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
Mm. It's amazing how fast time goes, man. Tyron hasn't won since 2018.
No. But I'm always surprised at how old Tyron is. I mean, he's the same age as us. Yeah, 82.
How old is he?
Yeah. He's 38. Wow. People tell me I'm too old.
Well, he's still going.
I know, isn't it? But he's got three losses, so that's probably not...
We'll see about that.
You know, yeah.
I like Tyron... When Tyron fought Kevin Gastelum, I like that Tyron is a solid, explosive fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, certain people have been critical over his recent sort of fight style, and especially when he got the belt, it seems like he was doing everything just to protect the belt type scenario.
King of the Hill mentality, wasn't
it? Yeah, which, you know, obviously I can understand that from a... I don't understand that from a fan and perspective point of view, but I understand that from a business point of view. Like, he's protecting his assets, as it was.
But then, like, if we're looking at the Venn diagram thing, the three compartments, he's fairly firmly an athlete with martial arts sprinkled in. The fighter aspect is there if he needs it.
He has
it.
To.
The older he's got, the less I feel like he's had that fight in him.
Mm.
Like, you think back to the Koscheck fight, he gets backed up and he's like... when Koscheck's dead on the floor.
Yeah.
But then, and like, I mean, like, you see glimpses of it, like in the Wonder Boy fights and in the Maya fight. Like, the Maya one was purely a game of defense.
Mm.
Like, he shut down, I think, 19 takedowns or something like that.
He's an exceptional wrestler, isn't he?
Oh, he's an exceptional wrestler. But it's easy to be an exceptional wrestler when you're only focused on being defensive.
Yeah.
Like, and that was the criticism of Woodley when he was the champion, is that the offense was lacking. It was King of the Hill. It's like, come and get it, and I'm going to hold on to it as tight as I can.
Yeah.
And, like, sometimes it works. Like, I mean, with Darren Till tried to go and get it, and he paid for it. He got caught with a clean shot. He got dropped, and he got Dars choked. Like, there is always that threat, but you've got to go and get it. And, like, Kamaru Usman managed it so well. Gilbert Burns did the same thing, hurt him in that first round, and then just drowned him. And, like, the point where the point where Woodley feels like he doesn't have that one punch knockout power anymore is the point where he checks out of the fight.
I mean, Colby broke him, didn't he?
Mm.
He actually did break him down.
Yeah.
Was that his last time out?
Last time out, rib injury in the fifth round, it's listed as.
Yeah.
It was a...
He's listed as.
Yeah.
even that, you know, psychologically how he comes back from, if, like, you know, obviously we're insinuating that he got broken in terms of he mentally got broken. Now, you can say what you want outwardly, but inwardly you always know when you've broke, you know, you always know when you give it away. Like, I can think of a couple of times where I've literally gone, and you can remember it because it sticks in your head because competes in sport and you know, especially maybe not just as a male, but you know, as an athletic person who's been involved in sports forever, you know, you recognize those times and you know, burns in your soul a little bit. And he's going to know that. Like he can talk it up as much as he wants, but he's going to know that.
Yeah.
And Vicente he's coming.
Yeah.
He's going to come. He's kind of going to come and get it.
Yeah. Vicente's a lot of fun to watch. He's got a very similar characteristic to Bilal Muhammad, who we were talking about recently. He's very good at walking you into the fence and making you fight between that black line and the fence. But
Woodley doesn't mind it there. He'll sit in that space with his right hand cocked and he'll wait for you to slip up.
That's what held Wonderboy off.
Yeah.
And that's the threat. He's like, I dare you. Like, make the move. Like, I've got a bigger gun in this fight, and that's his mentality. So that's where there's the risk of a stalemate. Unfortunately, this is only three rounds, so if it does become a stalemate, we've not got an extra 10 minutes to watch it. Like, it's going to be on Luque to go and get it, because Woodley's not going to come out and take it from him. It's just not in his nature, especially not anymore. Like, Woodley will wait and he'll see his opportunities. He'll be a bit aggressive in the first round because then he's feeling fresh and he's feeling like, well, if I land, it's done. And he's got that sprint attack, right, left, right hand knockout. Yeah. That's one he knocked out Robbie Lawler with and won the belt.
I mean, look, I know you fought Anthony Johnson, who was a massive human being, but I just feel like welterweights are massive now.
This is to scale.
Where's the Lego man?
There's me. That's actually pretty much to scale. That's me and Anthony Johnson like that.
Yeah.
That's how it just felt put
him
face
in,
off.
Put him in side control.
That's how it felt.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
The perfect representation.
That was a rough night.
I just feel like they're just big dudes. Weighing in at 77 kilos, honestly, I just can't believe they are who they are.
Let me put Hendo back over there.
You can sort of see with Vicente, you can see in his career what they're doing with him. Like, they're building him up and they give him a name. And then they build him up, and this is clearly someone he needs to get through if they're going to push him through to those top contenders.
I think they recognize that he's got the skills.
Mm.
But yeah, you're right. Like, you look at that. So he came out of,
it's like a clear wave, isn't it? Yeah. Like a wave of up, little settle up, off you go.
Yeah, like come after the Ultimate Fighter. So he had 1, 2, 3. He had 4 wins. And then they gave him Leon Edwards, and it was a unanimous decision loss. Then they go Price, Laprise, Turner, Barbarena, Krantz, Perry, and he wrecked Perry's nose.
Yeah.
Like, he had to catch a later flight so they could fix it before he left. And then they gave him Thompson, unanimous decision loss. Price, Brown, the pattern should go Woodley, somebody else, and then we'll see where he's at after that.
Beating on Brown, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
He did. He's a very, very good striker, very well-rounded striker. And I think he's going to have the scrambling ability to, even if he gets taken down, to force Woodley to work hard for every wrestling exchange.
Man, it feels like a changing of the guard. You never know when someone has the power and the experience that Woodley has. You never know, but it feels like a change in the guard moment, doesn't it? It'd be like, right, this is probably Woodley on his way out. This is probably Vicente on his way into the top spots.
Yeah.
My
only thing is, if, because calf kicks are such a fad at the moment, my only concern is that he's going to stand too much in front of Woodley and be on one leg when Woodley blasts him in the face. I could see that happening.
Mm.
Let's just remember that it's Tuesday at 8:34. I'm calling that Woodley might knock him out with a punch from a calf kick.
There you go.
Calf kick counter. Boom. Bang. Straight down the pipe.
Yeah. Well, I'm picking Vicente.
You're going Vicente, are you?
I'm picking Vicente.
That's my last-ditch attempt to sway. Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of last-ditch attempts on this card, aren't there? Woodley, yeah, we've got a couple of...
We've
got a couple of three-fight losing streaks and positive tests and...
God, I love this fight.
Not a good place to... You love this one, don't you?
Love this fight.
Well, I've just spent an hour talking about it yesterday.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to take this if you want the...
I wonder if that's going live.
If you want the real detail. When's it going up?
Well, it should be going up now, I think.
Yeah.
Or at some point today. It was all a bit short notice because obviously I was at... I was at Cage Warriors, yeah. Oh, no, it's on now.
There is.
2,500 people watching.
Alive.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's pretty cool.
There is something about heavyweights in there. There's just something about them that, like, I remember, like, even as a kid, the three things that the country stopped for: heavyweight boxing.
Heavyweight boxing.
Heavyweight boxing. Everyone got around the TV. Heavyweight boxing. The whole country stopped for it. Evander, Tyson, Bruno, like, the country stopped. 100 meter final at the Olympics every 4 years. The country stopped for that and watched it. And obviously when England play football, everyone watched that. But
yeah,
the heavyweights ground the country to a halt, didn't it? And, you know, people who didn't even like boxing would watch it. And you get that, you know, you just know why. There's just a different level of respect that goes into humans of that size that are trying to punch holes in each other's head.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, it's like we were talking about earlier, like... So if you take a big chunk of the population, if you take 100,000 people out of that population, and maybe what 5-10% of them are potentially heavyweight,
yeah,
right. Most people will look at these fighters and go, I don't know how I would deal with that. I don't know how I would negate that power and that force coming towards me. And that goes for Stipe as well as Ngannou. Obviously, Ngannou represents a greater power. So then you think to yourself, like, I mean, that does seem to be considerably more threatening. But then there are a few people that would look at that and go, okay, that's a problem I can solve. Then if you move down the weight classes, like if you put two bantamweights on the top of a card, your average pub man that weighs over 12 stone thinks he could have a go at these kids.
Yeah.
You know, he's good. Mighty Mouse, he's good, but, you know.
Look how small he is.
Exactly. And that's the thing that devalues these guys. And it's unfortunate, but it's true because... Like,
it's such a wild misconception.
It is, because, I mean, and oftentimes they're the guys that are considerably more skilled because they've had to be, because the talent pool is so much deeper.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you don't get guys as reckless as Ngannou in the lighter weight classes because they get filtered out.
Quick.
Whereas at heavyweight, that power becomes very, very real.
Yeah. And just physics in it, there's just so much more power when you're that size. There's just so much power. It's funny, like, when you look at Ngannou, you think he's just this monstrously big guy. But being in rugby, like, he's a big dude, but he's just sort of like a big dude. He's not that big.
Yeah.
Like, there's bigger dudes around in field sports, but it's just he's lean, he's big, and he's, you know, he's obviously pretty scary. But he's, what, 118 kilos, 6'4". It's like... It's all right. It's a good second row.
But the force he generates is pretty...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we were talking about the punch thing earlier. So, this is where... And I kind of feel for him in a way. Because obviously, you know, he's left his original team. He's not with Fight Factory anymore. So he's in Vegas and he's training out the PI. And, I mean, he's a superior athlete. So he's the PI show pony. Like, every time someone comes to take a tour of the building, it's like, hey, Francis, come and do the punch thing. Come and do the punch thing.
I love the PI. It's the last place he needs to be. It's the last place he needs. He's got all of the things the PI can offer him. He's got them.
He's got them.
In fact, leave him alone. Just leave him alone. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's the problem. He's like, he's the show pony. He's like, do the punch thing.
He needs to be with the best technical striking coaches he could find in the world.
Yeah.
And he would be unstoppable, but he's not at the level. He's getting, you know, you have to be of a level, but he's not at the level that he should be at with the raw materials that he's got.
Yes.
Yeah. Bloody nice guy, though.
Bloody nice guy.
Isn't he?
He's a massive human being.
Yeah. There's a great piece on our channel. V did a great piece. V, you know, is obviously on our channel. There's just a nice. I thought it came across really well. He's just a nice dude. You know, he's living his dream. Come from humble beginnings and what have you, and he's fought tooth and nail to get where he's got to, and he's got there. And
it must be very surreal for him still.
Yeah, it must be.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Like on the countdown show, trying on suits and you know, driving fast cars and stuff. It was just kind of...
It's just a cool story.
I love it.
I love that story. Maybe they'll make a movie one day about it.
Oh, for sure. I think they would. So what I was saying earlier about the press conference and watching Stipe, and then watching Stipe as he's hearing Dana talk about this Ford Escort analogy about, you know, like... If I'm Stipe, if I'm DC, I'm trying to put myself in a heavyweight body with skills that could possibly negate this. So then I start thinking to myself, well, what is my perception of that? And my first thought would be, yeah, but this is not a punch test. Like, a punch test is like drag racing.
Hmm.
It's like putting your foot on the gas and going as hard as you can for a quarter of a mile. Like, an MMA fight's like cross-country rally. It's like a Le Mans. Like, you have to manage the engine so it doesn't fall apart. Yeah. You have to deal with rough terrain. Yeah. You know, you have to deal with intangibles and people crashing into the sides. You know, it's chaotic.
The only thing that would be a better analogy is two Le Mans racing, one going one way, one going the other, and have to dodge cars on that along the way. You're going opposite videos at the same time.
I don't play racing games unless you can crash into other cars.
You know what I mean?
Like Stipe. So, I mean, I pulled this part. I've literally spent 3 days on this fight, and there's. If I'm Stipe, I can see loads and loads of ways to win the fight.
Mm.
Loads of ways to win the fight. But every way is dangerous and difficult and requires him to be on his best behaviour at all times. Right.
I've got the same similar analogy, not analogy, but similar notes down here in that there's Stipe has to make sure 10 things go right. He has to be on point on 10 things. And Ngannou only has to be on 1 point once on one thing, and he wins. But the first round of that, the last time they fought, is an absolute masterclass. It couldn't have gone any better for him, other than obviously, you know, getting a result in that first round. Mate, I thought it was an absolute masterclass. He got his respect by landing his hands on him. Stipe got his respect. He bounced in and out of range. He made him miss. He moved. He forced him to grapple. He went in the single leg. He swapped to double legs. He shot a beautiful timed double leg under one of Francis's haymakers. Shot in double leg. Bang. Mate, it was just a masterclass. It couldn't have gone any better. So he has a blueprint. He absolutely has a blueprint. But it still comes down to one slip up and it's probably over.
Mm.
And, you know, some of those uppercuts that missed by...
You watched my breakdown yet?
No, I haven't. You but I should do. We should always do this after you've done it so I can appear way more intelligent than I am. Mate, we're talking centimetres.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of centimetres one way and he just, you know, he just gets sat down and we've seen it so many times at that weight.
I picked out three clips on the breakdown show for the uppercuts.
Mm.
And...
It just like catches here.
The first one just misses him. It goes up past his head. It goes up that direction as he's level changing. The next one, you can see Ngannou's kind of curved it, but it still just misses him.
Yeah.
The third time it lands and it's that kind of stuns Stipe, and that's where he does that big drive double leg all the way across the octagon.
Yeah, yeah. Because he just been right at the last minute, just turns that, cuts that angle and takes him down. Yeah.
But I will say this about Ngannou. He's got excellent work with underhooks. Like he digs underhooks really well and works himself out of bad positions. And also, obviously, because, you know, he's got such good uppercuts, he can punch those uppercuts into place and then they become an underhook.
Mm.
You know?
I mean, I just can't get away from... Stipe has 10 things to execute on and he'll win the fight, but he has to execute on every single one of them and Francis just, you know, execute one once and it's done,
but it's game over.
Yeah, it's instant death.
Yeah, but that's why he's the underdog again.
It's the high stakes poker, proper high rollers table.
If they fought 10 times, how many times does Stipe win?
I don't know how this works in this context because
it's just a yeah. It's what does Lex call them? It's a thought game or something. He has a word for it.
Like yeah, just like else says that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which way do you go?
Thought process. Something I know. Yeah, you know what I mean.
It's...
Yeah, I think. I tell you what I think. I think. Every time Stipe wins, the chances of him winning again are higher.
are higher.
Because he's replaying this blueprint. He's replaying. I've got a blueprint.
I disagree with that.
Tell me why you disagree with that.
I think that stands as long as it's in the same fight. The more success he has in the same fight, the easier it's going to be to have success in that fight. I think the more time he fights Ngannou, the less chance he's got of escaping that chance of getting caught with a knockout shot.
But it's like flipping a coin, though. If you flip a coin and it lands heads, there's no more or less chance of it landing heads or tails the next time because it's a random event.
Yeah, but then at the same time, Ngannou's learning from one fight to the next.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know? And the thing is, he'd adapted his uppercut three times in three attempts.
Mm-hmm.
Like that also that, and the thing is, it's an instinct thing, isn't it? When you're such a powerful individual, you just need to connect. So you're only it's single mindedness. There's his head. Okay, I need to hit it with this.
Don't overcomplicate.
No, like where's it going? Okay, it's coming down here. It's coming down here. Oh, I missed it. Okay, second time. Let me have another go. Okay, it's coming down here. Oh, I just missed it. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, eventually he's going to get the right trajectory on that punch, or Stipe is going to switch sides one time for whatever reason. That's the coin toss that is MMA, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching your breakdown, but it's a fascinating matchup, especially at the weight and the consequence that it's at, and it's just I love it. It's hard to not want Stipe to be the champ. He's just like a blue collar hero, and he's just like solid, nice guy, tough, does everything, you know, never cut a corner in his life type thing. And I'm not saying that Francis is any other way, but just, you know, it's just Stipe is just a likable guy, isn't he? He seems like he's a good, solid, respectable champion of heavyweight champion of the world. I'm going Stipe.
Oh yeah.
Whoa. You didn't think I'd say that?
No, I didn't.
You would,
Strength and conditioning coaches always side with the greater athlete.
No. I'm a performance coach. I see all sides of the see all sides of the equation.
Is that what's it called? The Chris Eubank interview right before he fights Nigel Benn. And he turns to the camera and looks right down the eye and talks to everyone that betted on the puncher. And he's like, you've all made a mistake. You don't bet on the puncher.
Yeah, well, there you go. I'll listen to him. Yeah. He's a smart man.
So is that the way you're going? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I think he knows how to do it, doesn't he?
Mm.
He knows how to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, man, fascinating. Looking forward to it.
All right. Good.
Yeah.
All good?
Yeah.
How's that alpha brain working for you?
Yeah, I like it.
My brain's
racing. I've always liked it.
I'm going to go and do some water.
We've used Onnit and alpha brain for years.
I've only just started using these dissolvable ones, though. Yeah, I prefer these. I think that's faster working.
I always think with the supplement game, you have to be careful because I just don't believe in snake oils and pills and potions that claim to do stuff and they don't. And there's a core set of supplements that we know that are empirically researched make a difference. And Alpha Brain, you know, they've got some great research behind it. Subjectively, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
And especially for guys where, you know, if you've been around trying to perform for long enough, you've drunk a fair bit of caffeine over the years and, you know, you get that dose response dulling a little bit, and if you're looking for just that sharpness and that precision in the way your sort of brain works and your body works, it's a worthy investment.
Mm.
Yeah, for sure. I like it. Yeah. I like it a lot. And you know what? Again, if you're in the UK, go to X Brain, use X Brain, and they, you know, you save yourself time and money, and that's
And those taxes that you get on stuff shipping in from the US, which I always get stung for.
Yeah.
Wicked. All good. Nice one. Catch you next time.